Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Hello, everybody. I am back, and yet I'm not back. My name is Zo, that's Z-O or Z-O, if you're outside of the United States, and this is the Backflix Cinema Podcast. Now, the reason I say that I'm back, but I am not back, is because this is a very special bonus episode where I want to present to you one of the podcasts that I like listening to, and that podcast is called My Streaming Bubble, and you may be familiar with the host. The host of that podcast is Jen, and she's recently been featured on this show at least a couple of times, so I want to get a chance to expose you to this wonderful podcast. It's so fun and so comforting. You get Jen talking about movies that she loves with the people she tolerates. And I had the honor of being one of the people that she's able to tolerate. So I want to present to you one of her episodes that I was a guest on. I was a guest on her show, and we talked about The Princess Bride. And I want to give you a chance to listen to her show, and hopefully you'll check her out. I'll leave all of her links in the show notes. And you can find her pretty much anywhere you get your podcast. Without further ado, here is My Streaming Bubble.
Hey, Bubblies, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble. It's that little old podcast where I talk about the shows that I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your host, Jen, and today I'm excited to present you all with another podcast crossover day. Joining me in the bubble for the first time, but hopefully not the last, is the host of the very nostalgic podcast discussing the movies of yesteryear, Zo from Backflix Cinema Podcast. Hey, Zo, and welcome to my podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. I am so happy to be tolerated.
Yay! Well, I look forward to this conversation today, but before we get started, do you want to tell us a little bit about your podcast and where you can be found and all that good stuff?
Okay, so as you mentioned earlier, my podcast is the Backflix Cinema Podcast, or it might be called Backflix Cinema The Podcast. I haven't fully decided. I call it one way or the other. So my podcast can be found anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's on all of the podcast catchers. If you're on Audible, it's on Audible. If you're on Podchaser, it's on Podchaser. If you're on Pocket Cast, it's on Pocket Cast. It's practically everywhere. So you can find it there. You can also find me at my website at www.backflixcinema.com. That's where all of my links and socials and stuff at. But if you specifically are looking for me on Facebook or Instagram, it's at Backflix Cinema Podcast. And if you're looking for me on Twitter or TikTok, it's at Backflix Cinema. And we're a podcast where basically I watch movies with my son, and then I go on a podcast and issue a report, if you will, talk about our favorite parts, talk about the trivia, talk about what my son liked about the movie. These are movies that he's never seen before. So it's a delight to watch these movies with him for the first time.
Yeah, and it's a delight to listen to, honestly. I listened to your Short Circuit episode and the Con Air episode. Oh, and I think I listened to the bonus episode for Multiverse of Madness. I've been binge listening to a bunch of indie podcasts lately, and I'm trying to keep them all like organized and straight in my mind, but I'm just going down a rabbit hole. But those were very enjoyable. I loved the Short Circuit episode. It's one of my favorite movies from my childhood, and I thought you guys did a really great job discussing it, all the goods and the hasn't aged wells and the
yeah, there were some things that it's Short Circuit is one of the reasons that I don't really want to get into Revenge of the Nerds, because I loved that movie when I was growing up, and now I'm like, that's not appropriate behavior. That's criminal behavior.
It is. Oh my God. I 100% agree. I love that movie. And Porky's too. Porky's as well, but right. Yeah, I get it. I understand.
If I actually decide to do that movie, it's going to have to be a huge disclaimer up front. This is a spoiler warning, or not. This is a trigger warning. This episode will contain images of sexual misconduct, criminal sexual activity that at that time was perfectly acceptable.
Yep.
Because the patriarchy, and yes, it was a script written by men, and this is how men imagine women would react to being sexually assaulted. So,
mm-hmm. Yep, total fantasy, 80s fantasy.
Right.
But goddamn it, if I don't love it.
Right. I'm glad you said it, being a woman and all.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up watching that movie, and it's definitely like a favorite, but I haven't rewatched it anytime recently. It's been years and years and years. I'm kind of like you. As I get a little older and more farther away from it, I get a little bit more apprehensive about watching it because I like the nostalgia and remembering it with the rose-colored glasses.
Right. You don't want to watch it again. It's like, ooh, that didn't. It's not only did that not age well, then now I feel icky. Yes. I feel wrong for ever liking this. And it's like the more I think about it, the more of the problematic moments that I can think about. So yes, and like you said, Short Circuit 2 was the same way. But the guy that played the white guy that played the Indian guy, he did a spectacular job. He was just to do that,
right?
he went to work too. That's what's so awesome about it. He went to work to make sure that he did a proper representation of the person he was trying to depict. So kudos for him for going to work and fooling the people that he was imitating.
Absolutely. I mean, he's really good at his job then. So,
Yeah, it's hard to be mad at him. And then there's also discussion. There's another podcast I listen to. It's called, hold on a second while I grab the name. Not a Bomb Podcast. I don't know if you've heard that one. So they talk about movies that have bombed at the box office and they try to figure out if it deserved to be a bomb. So the movie they talked about was The Lone Ranger. And we know the problem with that one. The specific problem of Johnny Depp being white, playing a Native American. Now, there was a point where I think it was a Comanche tribe, that there were some members that kind of gave him like an honorary membership to the tribe. And he would tell people that he feels like he's Native American, but he never got a DNA test. So he doesn't know, and likely he's not. Right. So you don't go around telling people, I feel like a Native American. That's just your white privilege showing. No, you don't.
Exactly. Exactly. That's some Rachel Dozell shit.
Right. He was like, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to find somebody. What you should have did was you should have got yourself a producer credit and played a smaller part in a role and gave that role to somebody else who probably would have did just as good a job or better. Right.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds like a really interesting podcast. That's kind of cool that they go back and kind of re-examine and those films and whether or not they should have bombed or not. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's a nice, little niche.
Yeah, go check that out. You might even be able to get them to come on your show, or you might be able to go on their show. But it's a great podcast to listen to.
Excellent. So,
and then right. I write them letters constantly.
I like the idea of you sitting down and you're writing the letters like, dear podcast.
It's like, I did not agree with you at all. It's like your opinions were wrong. I'm not that direct, but that is essentially why I'm right. It's like they'll say something that triggers me, and I feel like I need to write a letter about the Lone Ranger. But I feel like at the same time, I should rewatch it to see if I do feel the same way about it as I did when I first watched it. Because like, there are a lot of people that didn't like this movie, and I was like, it couldn't be that bad. And I watched it, and I was like, I really love that movie. And now they're saying, well, if you watch it again, you're going to find some problems with it. So maybe I need to give it a rewatch to reevaluate it.
Yeah, a little bit more of like a critical eye. It's kind of interesting to watch things from just like a fan perspective. Like your intention is to sit down and want to enjoy it versus sitting down and being like, how can I pick this apart?
Right. Well, I'm doing that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the movie, I just watched A Thousand Years of Yearning or some whatever that one's called. That was the one with Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton. Right. And okay. I wanted to like that movie so bad. And it started off great. Like the first half of the movie was like everything I wanted. And then it was at a certain point, like at one particular point where it's like it's a genie, you make three wishes, right? So at that point where Tilda Swinton makes her wish, that's where it kind of fell apart for me. But some people like that point. Some people, there was another podcaster, he said that was the point where the movie was better for him. But for me, I didn't like the movie after that point. So I am looking at certain movies. It's like my critical eye is always up, right? But at the same time, I like to allow TV shows and movies to wash over me. I don't want to watch something and then like look for hidden messages and stuff like that. I might catch like all the hidden meanings in a second or third viewing, or mm-hmm. I might catch like some mistakes or faux pas or something like that. But I like for it to wash over me, not looking for anything hidden or something like that. And then if I enjoy it, then that's what I'm going to take for it. I must have enjoyed this movie or whatever. But sometimes some movies require a second look, at least a second look. Yeah. I think Nope is one of those movies.
I haven't watched that one yet. I really need to see that. I need to get caught up on some movie watching.
Right. You definitely need to see that.
Fuck yeah. So, well, until I can get that watch in and then maybe we can discuss it. Who knows? We'll see what the future holds. Right. We are going to be talking about the very beloved and lots would say perfect movie, the classic kissing book turned kissing film, The Inconceivable, The Princess Bride, starring Carrie Elwes, Robin Wright, Mandy Patinkin, Andre the Giant, Christopher Guest, and so many more. It's directed by Rob Reiner and based on the book written by William Goldman, who also wrote the screenplay, and is streaming on Disney Plus, or you can rent it on Amazon Prime or a host of any other streaming services, or purchase it or check it out from your local library. So we'll go ahead and give a quick spoiler warning / synopsis. So the IMDb synopsis is, while homesick in bed, a young boy's grandfather reads him the story of a farm boy turned pirate who encounters numerous obstacles, enemies, and allies in his quest to be reunited with his true love. My synopsis is, a grandpa visits his sick, ungrateful grandson and reads him a story about pirates, corrupt kings, revenge, and marriage. So, Zoe, what are your general thoughts on the movie?
I found it to be extremely enjoyable. What it is that I didn't get to see it when it first came out, when I should have watched it. I imagine that had I watched it when it originally opened or around the time that it was originally out on DVD or cassette or whatever, it would have been my favorite movie or one of my favorites. But it's not. Instead, as I watch it as an adult, it's just a really cute, enjoyable movie. It's the type of movie that I want to share with my little nephews and nieces. And that's the type of movie that it's something that you definitely want to share with younger people.
Absolutely. So was this your very first time watching it then? Or had you seen it maybe a couple years ago or something? Or is this like fresh, fresh, fresh?
This is fresh, fresh, fresh. I've only seen bits and pieces of it. Like it'll happen to be on TV and I'll catch a scene. The one scene I remember, two scenes I remember. I remember, you killed my father and now you must die. And I remember Andre the Giant in the movie. So I was like, well, I got to go watch that movie because this is Andre the Giant. I didn't know he was in movies. Right. But I never got around to watching it until I met you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I could be the reason why you got to sit down and enjoy this wonderful film. Like I said, some say absolutely perfect. And I kind of agree between the storytelling, the acting, the writing. I love it all. I think it's a unique story. Yes, it's true love and all of that. But from the pits of despair to the machine that sucks the life out of the Wesley and everything, to just the characters. So much fun between Vicini and Miracle Max, like all these side characters. And it's so well paced. It kind of, you know, you meet the grandfather and the grandson, and grandson Fred Savage is such a little shit.
You know what's funny? I was hoping that we talked about Fred Savage because now he's a grown shit. So, yeah. And yep. I didn't realize that he had such a problematic situation, you know, a work situation. He creates apparently, like the rumors are that he creates a toxic workplace. And I didn't realize that because he's a producer in a lot of TV shows. And that's not good when your boss is like that. Mm-hmm. But he, at the same time, he, as a little kid, like in that movie, he wasn't that bad, because, you know, you run into little kids like that all the time. It's like, because it's like, well, let me show you something. You're like, I don't want to see that. You know they're going to like it, but you have to kind of convince them. And through the storytelling in the movie, that's when, you know, Fred Savage gets more and more into the story.
Mm-hmm. It is really cute that he, how invested he does get as the story, as Grandpa keeps reading the story and the different twists and turns that kind of happen or whatever, you know, like when he thinks Wesley's dead and all of that, like he's very, very upset, and it's kind of adorable, but you don't have to be a dick about it.
Right, right. Especially when he says, you read that wrong. You read, no, go back. You read that
wrong. Yeah. Your grandpa just told you this book is like a generational thing. It's been read from like, from, you know, a sick kid to sick kid for years and years. Grandpa knows the story. Shut up.
Right. Right. But he wasn't, yeah, it was fun seeing that.
Yeah. I forgot how just kind of like little and like adorable he used to be, because yeah, as he got older, some very problematic stuff. I think there was like assault charges or something, or accusations. I remember very, very little of any of that. So I kind of remember a little bit of something along those lines. So anytime since then that he's been hired to do things, I'm just kind of like, so did I imagine that, or everyone's just willing to forget? And I think we know now everyone's just willing to forget.
No, what it is, like he has this, I think what it is that he says, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do it this time. And then he does it again.
It's almost like repetitive, like predatory behavior or something. Yeah, yeah. But it's these movies.
Yeah. That bitch was tripping. Come on now. It's me, Fred. Come on. Who are you going to believe?
Yeah. Wonder Years. Come on. Look at me. It's like, no, dude. But aside from Fred Savage, we also get Robin Wright as the lovely and also kind of bratty Princess Buttercup. Always kind of bossing people around and waiting to be rescued and a little useless in the swamps. But it's true love, and she's that kind of classic damsel in distress. And I as much as she kind of bugs me, it's still, I still like the character, because I love this movie. This is one of my all-time like favorite childhood movies. That's
right.
That has aged. It's still a classic tale. There's nothing problematic with this one.
Right.
So,
and at least she knows what she wants. She's at least resistant to being married to somebody that she doesn't want to be married to, right? So at the very least, she gives a little pushback, right? Even though she's not really in a position to give pushback.
That's true. She is very like open and honest and upfront. And I do kind of, that is always kind of interesting, the way that like her and Humperdinck acknowledge that, yeah, they don't like each other, you know, let alone love each other, but this is happening, and she can be as vocal about it as she wants.
Right, right, right. And Prince Humperdinck had some ulterior motives. So there's that.
Yep. That classic corrupt prince, and yeah, scheming and scamming and everything. So I do like Princess, and her and Wesley are really like just so sweet. And I was reading that that Carrie and Robin were actually quite smitten with each other during filming, too. And so I guess Carrie had said that when they kind of were first introduced or went to go do their first scene, he said that he found it a little hard to concentrate because he was just so taken back. And I was like, that's so romantic. That sounds so romantic. And I want to believe it, because I think that just fits with the movie theme and vibe as well. So, and they were both very, very, very good looking in 1987. Oh my God.
And you can imagine that the director and the producer was like, look at that chemistry, right?
Right,
as exactly. They were rehearsing and whatnot, or they were casting and they put them opposite of each other. I was like, yeah, this is going to work out perfectly.
Yep, and it did. Right. And there's, you know, I was reading some of the different casting choices for some of the different characters, and I guess at one point Arnold Schwarzenegger was considered for the role of that Andre got of Fezzik. But that was like back in the 70s. And so that didn't go through. And by the time the movie did start to move forward, Arnie was already a big action star. And so they were able to get Andre the Giant. So, which I think is a, I think this movie is just beautifully cast, wonderfully cast. Everyone does an amazing job with their characters.
Well, in the late 70s, Andre the Giant was a much better actor than Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then Andre was not that great in this movie, but he was so, his English was better. His diction was better. As a matter of fact, I feel like his speech was, I wanted to look it up to see if he did his own speech, but it sounded like him to me because I've heard him speak in wrestling, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so even like in this movie, he sounds better than the way he sounds in wrestling, because in wrestling, his accent is really thick, right? Mm-hmm. You have to concentrate. But I think it seems to me that he had some, either he had some coaching or his English had gotten better when he did this movie.
I could see maybe a little bit of both, just maybe him wanting to do a good job, because Andre was, I think, kind of one of those classic big friendly giants. He's huge. He was massive, but he was like, you hear the stories, you watch the documentaries, and he was just like the nicest guy. And one of the other things I read was that while it was kind of cold shooting the movie at some points, Robin Wright would get chilly. So Andre's hand was so big, he would just place it on top of her head, cover her whole head, and help keep her warm. So this is all from IMDb. And so IMDb has never lied to me. So I could see that. I feel like that is, I absolutely believe that is true.
Right.
Yeah. And so, okay. So we have Princess Buttercup and her little dramatic ass about like thinking like towards the end of the movie, I just have to say when Wesley doesn't come, where she thinks Wesley isn't coming to save her, and she thinks she has now married the prince and she's going to go and kill herself in her bedroom. Like, oh my God, it's a beautiful little blade that she has, not little blade, but the little dagger or whatever. And like through your chest. Could you be more dramatic?
Yeah. It's dramatic and hardcore, because like most of that's hard. It's hard to stab yourself. And most people would go to something soft like the neck or the wrist, but she was going for the chest. She was like, if you're going to stab yourself in the chest, you want to use something like a sword and fall on it, right? Because that way you guarantee for it to work. And if you're trying to penetrate your chest, you probably get skittish halfway through and not actually do it. Or you'll hit a rib and then you'll get in pain and you'll get scared and you won't go through with it. But she was like, whoa. I don't even know if she even knew where her ribs was, but she was going for it.
She was going for it. Her heart was broken. It was shattered. And she was just trying to recreate that feeling or something, because like it was gonna go slow. I don't know why I overthought this moment when I watched it the other night. But I was like, what did you think was gonna happen? Thank God Wesley was in there.
Right.
I could see just kind of like making a small indent, just like the tiniest little like prick, and just her being like, ow, and then just throwing a fit about that, how that didn't work out for her.
Right. Yeah, Wesley was like, yeah, that's a perfectly good set of breasts. Is hate for you to ruin them.
What a classy way to say nice tits.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And speaking of Wesley, farm boy turned Dread Pirate Roberts, which we find out is just a lore. Their Dread Pirate Roberts has been retired for years and years and years. And it's just something that the whole look, the Zorro-esque look, just has gotten passed down from person to person. So what did you think of Wesley, and what did you think of his kind of little arc of always being in love and just being reunited and being a badass?
That was cool. He had a nice little arc, because he started off as a kind of a simp, right? Mm-hmm. Like whatever the princess want, you know, he would just go ahead and do it without any fuss about it. But at the same time, I think he was just being a nice guy. And I guess it's the thing where, you know, nice guys don't always finish last. And then he got lost at sea, which is kind of cool, to come back pretending to be a pirate. And then he was chasing them. I felt like there's a chapter missing where he caught up with the princess. So because he was chasing the bandits that had kidnapped her. And so how he was able to catch up with them is not explained. But we're going to skip over that part for the sake of it being everything else in the movie was pretty cool. And then he was funny. He was like real funny. His comic timing was sweet. And I liked his speech and his manner was all really cool. So he was like, yeah, I'd like to be that guy.
Yeah. I feel like people that watch this maybe as a kid probably wanted to be, went through little phases of like, you know, pretending to be the Dread Pirate Roberts and wear like a little eye mask and pretend to be fencing and everything. Cause I mean, he was pretty cool. The sword fight between him and Inigo is still one of the best, like, fight sequences, sword fight sequences, I think I've ever seen. And the fact that it's those two, they trained and trained and trained. And so there's, I've read two different things. One, there's like no stunt people. And one other thing that said there was one stunt person for Carrie Elwes' character to do one of the flips or something, which I could see.
I think that's likely. I didn't notice that, but I did notice a stunt person when they were rolling down the hill.
Yes. Dude, that hill and the way Princess Buttercup just yeets her ass down, like, you couldn't have tried to, like, walk slowly, like, again, with the dramatics.
Yeah, also, there are ways of rolling, like, if you wanted to roll down a hill, I feel like there were safer ways to do it, right? Yeah. she practically threw herself down the hill. But yeah, that was a great sword fight. I really loved, that was one of my favorite parts of the movie, was the sword fight between those two, because they were all equally, one of my favorite lines in there was like, yeah, you are better than me. This is when Inigo says, you are better than me. And then, what's his name? Wesley says, well, why are you smiling? He says, because I know something you don't know. I'm actually right-handed. So.
Yep.
And so he was fighting with left hand, he switched to his right hand. And then later on, Wesley does the same thing. So that was fun. That was really sweet.
That was a lot of fun. And it sounds, this may sound a bit made up, but I remember it must have been like the first time watching that scene when I was a kid and just being like, oh, he's not actually, like, it was the biggest twist for me. I was like, oh my God, he's not left-handed. Oh my God, he's not left-handed either. It was. So again, it definitely a movie for kind of a younger crowd to kind of really build into that sense of wonderment, suspending disbelief, fantasy, all that stuff. So it's still one of my, like I said, still one of my absolute favorites. And I read it's like a 3-minute long fight scene, fencing scene, mm-hmm. which I thought that was kind of impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. That for an action sequence, that sounds pretty long.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and especially for like 87, where this isn't like your 80s or 90s, like big blockbuster action flicks, you know? So you have a nice action moment, 3 minutes, and it's funny, it's engaging, it's entertaining, and it's very wowing. And again, perfection with this movie.
And they didn't have to kill each other, so that was sweet. It's like, yeah, I beat you, but I don't need you following me. Because
Zoe froze.
Oh, there you go.
There you are. Okay. All right. So go ahead. I'm sorry. You froze there for a moment. So kind of cut out what you said there. So if you want to repeat that.
I was saying that I'm not even sure where it was. What did I say? Something about the sword fight was 3 minutes and that was kind of long for a sword fight. So I did say that part. Yeah. And then what was the other part that I said? It was engaging. I don't know if I said that or not, if it were engaging or not. What was the other part that I said? I said that, I don't remember. It's gone. It's gone now. it's lost to iniquity.
Oh, well. Well, if it comes up, if it happens to come back to you, just shout it out. No big deal. So.
Right, right.
But yeah. And then, okay. So. Since we're talking about Wesley, I loved the respect. Oh, that they didn't have to kill each other is what you were saying.
That's what I was saying. Yes. He said it would be a waste of a good swordsman. So he knocks him out with this sword. And how Wesley takes over basically all three gang members was pretty sweet. Right.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, and I love that too, because after Wesley knocks out Inigo, he tells him that he has the utmost respect for him. And then you really see that when they all kind of come together and join forces at the end, and then at the end too. So I really love that whole back and forth with Wesley and Inigo and the tete-a-tete and the banter, but then also that respect and those moments from Inigo being like, wow, like, who are you? Who is this guy? You're so impressive. So it's so cute. I love it.
Right.
So, and then while we're on Inigo, what did you think of Inigo and his quest for vengeance?
Oh, it's one of my favorite characters. And even having not seen the movie, just that part where when he finally confronts the man that he needs to get revenge on, and he keeps saying that line, that's what I first knew him from. And so then, so I finally get to see his whole story arc from the beginning. Like, he's basically joined up with this gang, and he wants to get revenge. That's the sort of thing. But he, vengeance is a costly pursuit, right? So he has to do something for income in the meantime. So that's what he's doing. It's like vengeance is his podcasting, and being with this gang is his real job, right? So yes. He's like, soon enough, he's gonna his real job is gonna pay off, and he's gonna be able to do his podcasting on the side.
Oh my God, I love that. That's perfect.
Yeah. And then I like, him telling his story about how he trained his whole life. And it's like, he's both telling you and he's showing you at the same time that he's a great swordsman. And so one of the best moments in the film is like when they're all, he's surrounded, like he confronts the guy, right? The guy that killed his father, but the guy has like four swordsmen in front of him. And it's him and Andre the Giant behind him. So you figure they're both going to fight. But when they charge him, he kills all four of them. And it looks fantastic. It's like, one charges him, he slashes him, he stabs one behind him. Then he runs the other guy through that's right in front of him. He takes them all by himself, not needing Andre's help. And then he challenges that guy, the six-fingered man, right? And the guy, and then it was funny how the guy looks like he's going to fight and then runs away. So that was pretty awesome, because he already knows that he's outmatched. So that was pretty cool. And then near the end, when they catch up with him and he's stabbed, but then he's like, he refuses to die, right? He just fights through the pain, because it's like the most, because at first he was resigned to losing. He tells his father that, he says, "I'm sorry. Sorry, father, I did my best." And then, something just clicks in him and he refuses to die. He fights on and he basically gets his revenge. So that was pretty cool. He was just a cool character. Like admonishing that, what's his name, that the boss of the gang, and he says, "Why do you keep saying that word? I don't think you think of me." I loved his accent. It just, everything was just fun about him. But also, when they said that, at least the little guy, whenever he used inconceivable, it was the correct way. He just overused the word. It's like there weren't any other words. It's like he learned that word, and then is like that was his favorite word, and he wasn't going to give it up. Yeah, well, there are some synonyms like unbelievable, incredible, but he wasn't using those words. It's inconceivable. That's the only one he wanted to use. And like, he used it for what all of it was worth.
It's like his word calendar, like of the day or something. So he had to, it's almost like he had to be able to have to try and use it in a sentence so many times in a day. And hopefully he reached his goal before he kicked it. So, well,
I think it was his word calendar for the year, because he was... He was all about that word. Inconceivable, right?
Inconceivable. And now it's like, because, I've watched this movie for so many years, it's like anytime I hear the word inconceivable or see it written anywhere, that's Vicini goes through my head, is inconceivable. So I love that there's so many like pop culture historical moments from this movie, memeable moments, quotable moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
This movie is so much fun. So, yeah, I love Inigo. I love Mandy Patinkin. And then kind of reading about how his inspiration for Inigo and this quest for revenge, how he kind of put himself into it because using the pain and the loss from when his father died from cancer. So he had said that in that final fight scene against the six-fingered man, and he gets his revenge, for him, that was a very like therapeutic kind of moment, because he felt like in a way he was getting revenge on for his father, and that in a way the six-fingered man kind of represented cancer. And as someone who has lost both parents to cancer, oh, I would love to cut a motherfucker. Metaphorically, right, to get that.
right. But, metaphorically, of course.
Yes, of course. So I love that he put so much of himself into that role and into that. And you really feel that, especially in that last fight scene where he gets his revenge against the Six Finger Man. One of the best, and I think one of the more emotional scenes, especially when you know that little kind of fun fact tidbit about it. So,
right. It's like, Jenny, why are you making me wear this t-shirt that says cancer on it?
No worries. Just stand there now. And
Right. Just stand there and just pray for me. Also about Patinkin. I was excited to see this movie because I think a couple of weeks ago, one of the movies I did was Alien Nation. And I was like, oh my God, he's in this one too. It's not now. There are two movies that I know him from. It's Alien Nation and it's this movie. And I love both of these movies. But I didn't realize that it was him because he's playing the alien. And I wasn't familiar with him as an actor. I wasn't familiar with him. The only thing I knew about him was like this movie. But obviously, he's been in other movies. Now he's in a really popular TV show right now. But yeah, he played the alien partner. The name that he was given was Sam Francisco, like Sam, like S-A-M, Sam Francisco. And that's when his partner cop, he was like, no, I'm not calling you that. I'm not calling you Sam Francisco. There's no way I'm calling you that. From now on, your name is George. I'm calling you George Francisco. Because there were like 300,000 aliens and it was like, the department that was in charge of them was running out of names to give them, right? So they was like, they just started fooling around. You got some people running around named Albert Einstein. There's another guy running around named like after some other famous person. So yeah, they just started giving out whatever kind of names.
That's kind of funny. Yeah, I have to say that I'm, you know, fully aware of who Mandy Patinkin is, and maybe it's from this movie and everything. But when going through his IMDb, I realized I haven't seen a lot of anything else that he's really been in. But he's so well known, and I think very well respected, and he just seems like a nice dude. So
yeah,
we love Mandy Patinkin. I'm sorry, I'll watch more of your movies. I promise when I have more time. So
right.
All right. And let's see. Let's go ahead and talk about Vicini, Fezzik, and, well, we touched on Inigo. So what did you think of Vicini, the inconceivable, and yeah. Fezzik, Andre? What did you think of these two characters?
Well, Vicini, that character, I feel like I've seen an actor before, but I don't remember where I've seen him. But he was just kind of like, unfortunately, he reminds me of me, somebody who thinks he's smarter than what he thinks he is. He's going around trying to prove to everybody what a genius he is and belittling everybody else because they don't, you know, he doesn't see them as his intellectual equal. Also, he's not a sailor because he's saying left instead of port. He's like, just go that way. Just go that way. He's like, he has no idea how to command his men to run the ship, right? So not a sailor, obviously. He had all them brains, but didn't bother to learn how to, you know, operate a sailing ship. So is that kind of smart? It's like, yeah, he's not as smart as he's trying to impress people that he is. That's why he likes to use words like inconceivable. That's the one 4-syllable word that he learned, or 5, and that's the one he uses most often. And then there's the battle of wits, of course. That's the end of his story arc where he's still trying to prove that he's the smarter one, but he's a loser at the end. And it was awesome. I love the way that worked out. He's like, yeah, the poison is this cup. It's like, no, the poison is in both cups, right? I'm just not affected by it.
Oh, I love the whole back and forth. And then at one point, Wesley's just like, you truly do have a dizzying intellect. And then Vicini's like, wait till I get started.
Right. Yeah, that was awesome. Oh, also about him, I think it was because he was short. I think he had a short man complex. And that's why it was like, well, I'm not tall, so I'm just going to have to use my brain and impress everybody with my what little bit of intellect that I have. Because Andre obviously had the strength, and then Inigo had the fighting skills. So he had to bring something to the table.
the quote brains of the operation.
Right. I mean, the best thing he did was conceive of the plan to kidnap the princess and use that use her demise to try to start a war, right? So, and it's funny because apparently the prince was trying to do the same thing. So that's a little bit confusing, but I'm going to leave prince that hired, by the wayside.
The prince hired Vizzini and his little crew to kidnap the princess to do all of that. So
Right. So yeah. So that fails. So he's going just to have to do it himself. And then Fezzik, Andre the Giant. You know, it was funny when I was watching on Amazon, and you know how you, when you pause the screen and you put your cursor on the screen, it gives you like a little bit of information and trivia and whatnot. So it credited Andre as Andre René Rosimov. And I was like, oh, that's cool. They put his real name on there.
Oh, that's so sweet. I think that is so sweet.
Right. And Andre's acting wasn't the best, but it was better than what I expected of him, right? But obviously, he's been acting for decades in the ring, so it's not like he's completely unfamiliar with the craft. So he did a pretty passable job. He had some really funny moments, right? So, and it, like I said, his ability to speak English was much better than I had anticipated, because I was expecting a bunch of garble, right?
Yeah, hard to understand. So like
yeah, because he has a French accent, and it is, there are some moments when it is truly thick. Like,
Yeah, even being familiar with this movie, I'm very grateful for my closed captioning, because I have to watch everything on with closed captioning on. Otherwise, I can't hear it, and I'm not hearing impaired in any way other than just too many concerts in my youth.
Right. Yeah, that'll do it.
So, but there were still times where I'm like, okay, so that's what he said. I got that kind of clarification where I was always like, did he say this or that? I'm not really sure. So love the closed captioning. It's my favorite. So I think one of my favorite things about Fezzik is his ability to rhyme. So when they first kidnap Princess Buttercup, and they're on the ship and they're getting ready to sail away and everything, and Vizzini's really, really mean, because he is. He's very belittling to both of them. Right. And you can see that, like, you know, he says some hurtful shit to Fezzik, and you can see that Fezzik is bothered by it. But then Inigo comes in and, you know, says something like, I can't remember what word it was, but it kind of sets off the back and forth rhyming.
Yeah.
That was the sweetest thing. I was like, he saw that his friend was hurting and wanted to help brighten his spirits, and it worked. And I love it so much. And so then kind of throughout the movie, every once in a while, I think Andre's Fezzik would kind of randomly rhyme with against something someone said. And I just thought that was such a cute little touch and so much fun, and something that, like, I can't believe I never really picked up on until more recently. I was like, oh, he's such a good rhymer.
What's also funny is that he had way more lines than I ever expected of him. He was like, oh, he's a practical motor mouth in this movie.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, and especially when they disguise him, as the dreaded dreaded pirate Robert. Oh my God, what is wrong with me? As the dread pirate Roberts, and they've got him on the cart and they light him on fire, and his whole spiel and terrifying the guards and everything. That was quite a bit.
Right. Now, was that actually him on the cart, or was he like behind the cart or something? Because I thought maybe they put like an effigy where he would be, or something that was his size, and he was kind of like in the bushes making announcing the dread pirate, because they set him on fire, and obviously he wasn't on fire.
I think it was supposed to actually be him, but obviously, you know, because in the way it was filmed, that we only got the more far away shots of seeing the you know, quote, him on the wheelbarrow thing on fire, but we would get a couple of close-up shots where there's flames in front of it, trying to, I think, supposed to be like, see, no, he's really on fire, but no, we can't actually set Andre the Giant on fire.
And there's no stuntman that big.
Right, exactly. So I really, you know, because there's kind of times where, you know, like that scene where you're like, oh, that's clearly not Andre, that's clearly not even a person, that's some statue or something that they set on fire for the shot. And even like the sword fighting scene with Wesley and Inigo, the kind of little ruined area that they're fighting on, it doesn't look like real or legit, or how, you know, But I love that. And I think that just adds to the fact that this is a grandfather telling a story to a child. And so we're not going to see everything perfectly. You know what I mean? It's going to be a little off in that sense. So I always kind of chalked it up to that as well, even though it's clearly like not Andre or a person. But I'm like, oh, no, it's the kid's imagination. I guess we'll go with that. So
Right. Absolutely. I wasn't bothered by that. It wasn't like the most realistic looking setting or whatever. The costumes were a little bit it was a little bit too fantasy looking. Right. It's not like they went for like a Game of Thrones realism. They went for. But what would a costume that a child would imagine for this time period? And that's what they went with. That's where they chose the colors. That's why they weren't bothered that it looked like everything was shot indoors. So it wasn't we're not bothered by that because it's supposed to be a child's imagination. So I was fine with that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And so agree with everything about Fezzik and Vizzini. So the actor is Wallace something or another. Now, all of a sudden, I can't think of his name, but he's definitely like a that guy. He's popped up in a ton of things and he's done, you know, he's got a very distinctive voice. So he's done a lot of voiceover work. So when I was scrolling through his IMDb, I was even just like, oh, yeah. And he was in that. Oh, and he did that voice. And so very extensive. And I always get a kick out of seeing him and hearing him because he's always going to be Vizzini.
Right.
All right. So let's see who else we have on the list. I guess we still have like Prince Humperdinck and anyone else that you wanted to bring up. What did you think of Prince Humperdinck and his just ever so busy schedule of pitting two countries against each other and murdering his wife and framing her for it? Is he swamped?
Right. Yeah, he's when he first appeared on screen, it was one of those things where I know that guy. And because I was watching on Amazon, I was able to find out instantly who he was. Like, is that the guy? It's like, yes, that's the guy. That was the guy who was in Fright Nights. He played the vampire.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God. And he looks exactly the same. He's like, it's that guy. He's playing the same character. He's playing an older guy trying to bed a younger, like, teenage girl. It's like I guess that's the type of parts he gets, right? That he's typecast as a sexual predator. So, he's got that face too. He's like perfectly, what you call it? He's perfectly cast as that, I guess. He's got that creepy face. He's like handsome and creepy at the same time.
Yes.
And I like that a lot of movies have competent villains, right? So in this movie, there were no competent villains. These villains didn't know how to fight. They, as soon as they come up with any kind of opposition, they fold. So that's what he did, right? So as soon as it's like he had Wesley in the bed, Wesley is still weak from the torture, but he doesn't know it, right? He doesn't know that Wesley is still weak. And so Wesley like threatens him anyway. He bluffs and he wins the bluff because Humperdinck is such a coward. So that was, and he played the role perfectly, at least, but he did have some skills. Like I like that.
Yes.
He was competent in tracking. He was competent in detective work. So he was a fairly good detective. But he wasn't a fighter, so that was pretty cool. And he was surrounded by people who didn't want to fight. Mm-hmm. And apparently his father and mother had no clue what was going on, right? Just dense, right?
Oh, yeah, that old king, he's just like, she kissed me. She confessed she's going to hurt herself, but she kissed me. Like,
right. Yeah, as like they are basically out to lunch. Yeah, so that's why he could get away with everything that he was getting away with, because his father was basically absent. So, but yeah, he was a pretty cool villain. I liked that it was different from the other villains that I'm used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
There's like too much Marvel, I guess, because
sure.
All of the villains in Marvel are super competent, and this guy was not, right?
Yeah, in Marvel, everyone's a genius and a specialist in something or another, and this guy he's a really skilled tracker, and I've always hated that about him.
Hated that he was good at something.
Yes, exactly, and I think maybe that's it, because he's so incompetent like everywhere else, and he's so shallow. And yeah, like you said, a coward, because when Wesley confronts him and threatens him, it's a pretty terrible, pretty gnarly fucking threat. And, right. you know, it's to the pain and this and that. And right. it's like the idea of being ugly and hideous and the nightmare of children, women and children across the land was enough for him to be like, I can't be ugly. I'll be captured, but at least I'll still be, you know, predator pretty.
Right, right. Also, what's interesting is that he reminds me of Prince Farquaad. I'm thinking that maybe Prince Farquaad was based on him.
Maybe a little inspiration there.
Yeah,
I could see that. I could see that. Absolutely.
Except Farquaad was, I think, was a little bit more competent. So, you know, and maybe not entirely. And of course, you didn't mention him, but we got to talk about, there were a lot of cameos in this mm-hmm. movie, but the best cameo was the Billy Crystal cameo.
Yep, Miracle Max.
You're right, Miracle Max and his wife, and he was just pouring on like the New York Jew. he just poured it on thick, and that was basically the funny part. Like just him acting that way, because like nothing he did was actually funny, like going on and getting the bellows and pushing air into his mouth, and it was just the way he was talking and his thick accent. That was the only thing that was funny about that, and that was pleasure. I always enjoyed Billy Crystal. It's one of the upcoming movies that we're going to do is City Slickers. So
nice, classic. Yeah,
truly enjoy. I should be watching the one where he's the stranger, the murders in the building. Isn't he in that one, or is that somebody else? No, yeah, okay.
That's only Martin Short. Yeah, and Steve Martin and Selena Gomez.
Right.
And it's
okay,
amazing.
Right.
I love that show so, so much. I've gushed about it a lot, just kind of randomly in episodes. Well, Steve Martin and Martin Short, as I have said before, are two of my favorite old white guys, and I love them to pieces. And it's going to be a very sad day for me when those days come. But I love them. And I'll say it again, this weird trio in that show, Only Murders in the Building, of Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez works. And I love it. And I'm looking forward to season 3.
Yeah, man, I should check that out.
Oh, totally. Also, it's such a fun watch.
There's the grandpa and grandson. The one thing I wanted to know, besides Peter Falk, like totally surprising me, because it's like when I started to realize that, oh yeah, people can play different roles, right? He doesn't have to be just Columbo. It's like, oh, it's Columbo with a mustache. And he was actually somewhat different than Columbo. It was much more animated. It looks like Columbo looks like somebody who's been walking the beat for a long time. And he has, you know, like body, his body's in pain all the time. So he doesn't do a lot of movement. But the grandpa in this movie, like he was just moving around. He was animated. So I was like, oh, this is awesome. He was like a different person. He's acting, right? Yeah. So I believe the affection that the grandpa had for his son. And what I noticed about the son, besides like Fred Savage being Fred Savage, is like he when he was younger, he could do no wrong. He was like in this movie, then he was in the Wonder Years. I was a Fred Savage fan when I was younger. So
Little Monsters.
I don't remember that one. I've only seen him in Wonder Years. Okay. I did see that, and I've only seen pieces of The Wizard. So I didn't really see a bunch of that, but It was just him in the Wonder Years where I watched him grow up, which was awesome. So I noticed there were a lot of things in his room that I wrote down here. Did you notice the poster of the football player?
Yes.
So yes. Did you know who that was?
I think maybe from like commercials and stuff, because I'm not a big sports person.
Neither am I. Neither, but everybody knew him because he was a G.I. Joe. He was on all the commercials. His name is Refrigerator Perry, but I wanted to find his last name, because I can't remember his first name. I keep thinking George, but it's not George. It's William Refrigerator Perry.
Okay.
So he had that poster. So you can tell he's a big football fan because he has a t-shirt on and he has a poster. And then he had a Captain America action figure. I noticed that. He also had a He had a t-shirt. Oh, a Judge Dredd t-shirt that was on a chair that his grandpa was sitting on. So he's a kid just like me, playing his video games, collecting all the toys.
He had a He-Man action figure also behind him on his bedstand. It was more knocked out. It was like laying down. So it wasn't like standing up. Like the Captain America one was. And then I was reading too that they, I can't remember what the reason was, but they snuck a This Is Spinal Tap hat on set in Fred Savage's in the grandson's bedroom, because Rob Reiner also directed that movie. Christopher Guest is also in that movie, and that movie is fucking hilarious. One of my top, I've got a lot of top favorites, but that is definitely one. And one thing that you can always appreciate for Spinal Tap is the cultural impact of turning things up to 11.
right. Also, I that's one of the movies I really got to rewatch. That's definitely This Is Spinal Tap, because I've only seen it like once and just barely watching it. It's like one of those things that's on TV and you catch a couple of scenes, but you don't sit down and actually watch the movie. And I didn't truly watch it. So I definitely need to do a rewatch of that one.
Oh, absolutely. It's always worth rewatching. And it's so funny, the turning it up to 11, when it just randomly popped up in like a PBS kids show my kids were watching one day, and in the cartoon, the kids were doing a band thing. It was Peg Plus Cat, and I loved that show, and I'm sad that my kids are a little older for that now. But so they're doing a band, and one of the characters goes to the speaker, or whatever it's called, to turn it up to 11. And I giggled, and my kids were young, and they're just like, I don't... Do they go up to 11? And I was like, well, they can.
That joke was for me, children. I think they did start making certain speakers go up to 11 just as part of the joke. Like in real life, you could buy a speaker that went to 11 and that was the highest volume.
I love it so much.
That was a direct impact of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that This Is Spinal Tap and The Princess Bride are always worth rewatching. One with the kids and maybe not the one, not so much, but I love this movie. And were there any other like specific scenes or moments that kind of stood out to you, good or bad, or you're just for any reason?
Well, I was just looking to the side, looking at the notes that I made. So there were a couple. So there was one where they're doing the rescue, and I think it's, what's his name? If I'm not actually reading his name,
Inigo.
I don't know what it is. Inigo. Yeah. Thank you. So Inigo and Fezzik, they're in the hallway. They actually got the guard. They need the key from the guard. And I think the other guy was there too. But anyways, they're like, we need the key. And the guy's like, I don't have a key. I don't know what you're talking about. And then casually, they say Fezzik tear off his arms, and he's like, "Oh, this key right here." I love that.
Yeah.
The albino, he did one of my favorite scenes, one of a laugh out loud moment. So when Wesley Crusher. So
there
Wesley, when he's captured, right? When he's captured, he's laying on slab, and then the guy comes over and he comes in that voice and is like, "Oh, you're never getting out." And you, "Oh, you're never getting out of here." I was like, and his voice changed. So he comes and he sounds like Smeagol, and then and then he coughs up whatever is blocking his throat, and he has a regular voice. So that was real funny.
Oh, that's a classic. Yeah. One of my faves.
Yeah. 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 His Pits of Despair voice. But those are the two moments that I could think of that I wrote down in my notes that I really liked that we hadn't talked about already.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines in the movie is after Fred Savage, you know, the grandson is like, he yells at Grandpa, "You're reading it wrong." And Grandpa's like, and then, you know, he calms down and everything. Grandpa finishes the story and Wesley's alive. And the grandkid's like, "Yeah, see, I told you." And then Grandpa's like, yes, "You're very smart. Now shut up."
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like a little tired of this kid shit, a little tired of being interrupted, just wants to continue this story, goddammit. And then another one of my favorite lines is when Inigo and Fezzik have already taken Wesley to Miracle Max, and giving them the big pill that's coated in chocolate to help it go down easier, which I don't care how much fucking chocolate you put on that gigantic bean of a pill. There's no like going down easily with that thing. Holy shit. But he Wesley wakes up and he's like, what's going on? And then Inigo's like, he's like, all right, I'll explain. Too much to explain. I'll sum up. And then just goes into like, here we are in the, here's where we're at in the story. We have to now go storm the castle. And, and the way he even thinks about it for a second, he's like, nope, too much. Let me sum up. I don't, it, it has me laughing out loud literally every single time. It's some of the best like writing and delivery, this movie all around.
Yeah, also the whole ragdoll bit that Wesley was doing. Like, he was a total ragdoll being carried around. And they had to lift his head up so that he could, like, even talk to them. And then they would let his head go, and it starts flopping around. I was like, that was just brilliant.
Well, and then even, like, so in that same kind of moment, too, and they start going off, and Inigo's like, all right, he's got all these questions, and what about this? What about that? And... yeah, and Wesley can't hold his head up. So Fezzik's holding it and is doing the nodding motions for him in response to Inigo.
Right, right.
It's, what can I say? Like I said, perfect movie. I love it. Such great writing and acting. So well cast. And I love, too, that this movie was inducted into the National Film Registry for being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. And I couldn't agree more.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. Is there anything else? Any other scenes or characters? Yeah, because we touched on Miracle Max because you have to. Like you said, it's Billy Crystal and the wife, Carol Kane. Their whole interaction and kind of their married couple life and everything is so much fun.
Right, right. Like, you lied. You lied to him. He said true love.
Oh, yeah. To blame. Everyone knows to blame is to bluff. Like, do they, though?
Right, right, right. Oh, there was one more thing. There's one more thing I remember. The ROSs.
Yes.
So that was fun. It was like, because they're in the fire swamp. It was like, well, we got past the sand pits. We got past the fire holes. I think we're good. It's like, what about the ROSs? Oh, you mean the rodents of unusual size? Ah, that's fiction, right? And then he gets attacked. Right? Because you see it right away. Like, goodness gracious, it's a giant rat costume.
Oh, completely. Yeah, those things are terrifying. And then, yeah, the little like mini pits of like quicksand and everything. Like, and I remember being a kid in the 80s and thinking that quicksand was going to be like a legit issue I was going to have to encounter as I grew up.
All of us believed that quicksand was everywhere and we were going to get swallowed, especially if you grew up like in the country or you spent some time in the country and there's dirt and sand anywhere. Any one of those patches of dirt and sand is going to be a sinkhole or a spot of quicksand. You're always looking out for quicksand. Yeah, we thought it was everywhere. It's like the old Tarzan movies. Like, it seemed like every Tarzan movie had a scene where somebody gets sucked up in the quicksand. So, yeah, that was a real threat for a 5-year-old.
I look back and I think I'm just like, how, why, where did that come from? But I don't know. And now I'm terrified of like sinkholes. And so whenever there's like a news report of like a sinkhole happening or footage, I can't watch it. It just freaks me out. So I think my fear of quicksand has now evolved to sinkholes, which does seem like a real life legit problem that can happen literally anywhere. And I don't like it.
Yeah. Sinkholes are definitely real, and it's like, and it's always a surprise when it happens, right? Because you don't expect it's, you know, it's you least expecting that, and sometimes it's not even really a sinkhole. It's something where it's a similar phenomenon, but it's like your sewage gets it starts to flood your front yard, so instead of a lawn, you have like a sewage pit, and you got to call a company to go fix that. In Washington D.C. around where I live at, there was a huge flood, and the flood caused a sinkhole somehow. So then that it caused a water main to break. It was a really confusing situation. But in that part of the city, there was water everywhere. So yeah, yes, you have a right to be afraid of sinkholes, but you don't have to be afraid of quicksand as much anymore.
Right. Well, thank you for validating my fear of sinkholes. So.
Right.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping it up. So we'll go ahead and touch on stray bubbles. I think we're good, but this is the time, the last chance for us to bring anything up that maybe we missed or didn't get a chance to hit on. Do you have anything? Because I think I'm good. I think I've marked everything off my notes.
Okay. Well, I forgot all about the one of the things that you're going to be doing coming up next. So I'm going to have to, what's the word I'm looking for? Fake it.
No problem. So, all right. So I guess we'll go ahead and move on to the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, where we connect the movie that we are talking about to a Nick flick in 6 steps or less. Why? No reason other than I just fucking love Nicolas Cage. And this turns out to be like a very, very fun little bit. I've enjoyed it a lot. So.
Yeah, that was the one I forgot. So
that's what I figured. But
I was like, oh my God, the 6, because I knew there was something on here that I was supposed to do, but I totally forgot about it. So I can't think of any who directed this movie.
Rob Reiner.
So I'm pretty sure that there's a connection between Nicolas Cage and Rob Reiner some kind of way, but I'm not sure what that connection is.
I'm sure there is too. There's a lot of ways to get to a Nick flick that I've learned by introducing this segment. So, well, that's quite all right. I know life happens, things come up, and you know, it doesn't, whatever. Not a big deal. So, I have 2 because I'm a huge dork and I love doing these. So,
right.
I'll read off my 2. And if you think of anything in that by the time I'm done, by all means, feel free to share. So I've got the first one that I've got. I used Cary Elwes, who, as we have mentioned, plays Wesley in this movie. He also stars as Robin Hood in Robin Hood Men in Tights with Dave Chappelle, who plays Achu. And he was in, and Dave Chappelle was in Con Air with Nicolas Cage playing the character Pinball Parker. The second one that I have, I went with Robin Wright as Princess Buttercup. She was in the, I guess it's a mockumentary or documentary, I'm not sure, that starred Joaquin Phoenix called I'm Still Here. She's credited as herself. I've never seen the movie, so I don't know if it's, I assume it's a fictionalized version of herself. But Joaquin Phoenix was in 8mm with Nicolas Cage and played the character Max California. So those are my 2.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and hit up the kind of recommendations and what's been streaming in your bubble lately.
Okay. I did do that part. Hey! So, right now, like the head of the pack is She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. So, unlike a lot of people, I have not got Marvel fatigue. I don't think that's possible for me personally, because I've been waiting for this moment all my life. So, I am really enjoying She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. That show is fascinating. It's one of the best things that has come on Disney Plus in a while. And then I've also started House of the Dragon, because I love Game of Thrones. I'm not burnt by season 8 or season 7. Season 7 really isn't as bad as people say it is. And season 8, while it is bad for Game of Thrones, it is not bad as some of the other shows. It's like season 8 of Game of Thrones is better than a lot of people's other favorite shows. So I'm not bothered by it. Like, yes, it could have been better. And yeah. It's like the showrunners canceled themselves because it's like, for one thing, HBO did not want to end the series at season 8. They wanted to keep going for a couple more seasons. And the other thing is that they wanted a full season of season 8. They didn't want like 8 shows or however many episodes, but that was what the showrunners wanted to do, because they wanted to get on and do a show called Confederate, which thankfully they did not.
Mm-hmm.
And so House of the Dragon is looking pretty good. And then, I'm also watching right now The Orville, since I've finished something else. The Orville is really good. And I like to think of Orville as Star Trek Light. So at first, Orville started as a Star Trek parody, which was awesome. But now it's more like Star Trek Light, which is not as awesome, but it's still fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Sandman. I've only seen 1 episode of The Sandman, but I really want to get into this because it looks really good. It's exactly my speed. And I just finished up The Boys and Star Trek, Strange New Worlds. The Boys is like just the best superhero show on television. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you can't hide, you can't get away from it. You can't try to say, but this show is like, no, that show is not as good. It's like, there's no show as good as The Boys. Is just, it's got like spectacular action sequences. It's got blood and guts. And plus it's saying something at the same time. Like it's saying something about celebrity. It's saying something about responsibility and stuff like that, or power dynamics. It's saying stuff about a lot of things, and it's saying it well. It's way better than the comics. The comics is, I don't want to say the comics is trash, but the comics do too much. Like the comics is trying to do too much to shock you. Mm-hmm. And The Boys basically dial it back a little and to the appropriate amount of shock. And then Star Trek Strange New Worlds, it's the best live action Star Trek in a long time since, I would think, The Next Generation. But some people would say Deep Space Nine, but I'm really more of a Next Generation kind of guy. So I would say it's Strange New Worlds is really good. It's like it's funny, right? Because the running joke is that most of the Star Trek first seasons, they start off pretty rocky. They start off pretty bad. Mm-hmm. The original series, that was good. It was a good first season. And again, it kind of tapered off. It was first and second seasons were good, but then the third season was really bad. And then, that's the consensus anyway. And then when they moved to the next generation first season was a lot to be desired. The same thing with Deep Space Nine and the same thing with Star Trek Voyager. And, but then when they started these new shows, it's not that it started off bad, and like Discovery didn't have a bad first season, but it wasn't great, right? Mm-hmm. And then they was doing something where they were doing a story arc, which is something brand new for Star Trek. And then there was they was doing the same thing with Picard. And most people are not as enamored with Picard as the other Star Treks. But then they brought Lower Decks, which is something I got to start watching again, because I heard the shows are starting. So that's going to be another show in my bubble. So Lower Decks is awesome. And it's only slightly less awesome than Strange New Worlds, but it's just an awesome. I love the inside jokes. I love the animation. And I love that they kind of take it seriously at the same time joking about it. And of course you've heard of the crossover that is planned between Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks.
Mm-hmm. I have heard that. So it's like, I haven't consumed like any of the new Star Treks, but we just recently got Paramount Plus. So now is our time to get caught up on all the new Treks. So Strange New Worlds is going to be up in the bubble, our bubble, Lower Decks. I'm looking forward to watching all of it. And so since I haven't seen them, I only heard that little bit about the crossover and then just kind of stayed away because I'm like, I don't want to spoil anything. It sounds like a lot of fun, and like I'm really going to enjoy it. So it's good to know. Good to have things to look forward to. So
Yeah. Even Prodigy, which is their kid show, even that was pretty good.
Okay.
And I'm also watching Harley Quinn. I'm trying to get in all of my DC shows before WBD cancels everything. It's like did you hear that they canceled DC fandom?
Yes, I just heard. I'm like, you guys are a fucking mess. Holy shit.
And then it was like, oh no, don't do that. It was like, I don't pay attention to DC Fandom, but I know how important it is to like really the industry, right? So mm-hmm. they're canceling it because they don't know what they're going to do. So they don't want to make any promises that where down the line they're going to say, well, we canceled this project or whatever. And I can understand, but still, how about not canceling any more products?
Exactly.
But yeah, the merger just happened. They're in a state of turmoil. They promised their investors that they were going to cut a certain amount of stuff, a certain amount of money from the debt. And so that's why they canceled Batgirl. That's why they on the fence about The Flash. I think they're really going to go forward with The Flash.
That's so fucked up. Sorry.
They put Ezra Miller on the apology tour, which is funny. People think that Ezra Miller issued an apology. What I think is that WB wrote an apology and attributed it to Ezra Miller. That's what I think that is. even if Ezra Miller came out and read a statement, I would think that's something that he was given by lawyers. It's not something that they did from the heart or whatever.
Right.
So, they spent a lot of money on it. See, what I heard was that their strategy is that they want to do big blockbusters or tiny TV shows. So Batgirl was like somewhere in the middle. Like, it wasn't big enough to be a blockbuster because they only spent $90 million for it. And it wasn't small enough to be a TV show, even though it was planned on being on streaming in the first place. It was like they planned on releasing it on HBO Max. But and then there's a whole thing where they're going to merge the HBO Max and the Discovery apps. Don't know what's going to happen with that. So yeah, they're in a state of flux right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shit is messy. And it's just, I feel like it's just like one heartbreaking announcement after another from the whole WB and HBO ovary and everything. And it's like, just, it makes me nervous. So, but we'll see. Who knows?
We definitely know that Shazam is coming out, Black Adam is coming out, and The Flash. I'm pretty sure The Flash is coming out. So those are three, like, oh, and Aquaman 2, is that, or 3? That's Aquaman 3. Is it 3? I'm confused now. No, it's Aquaman 2.
I don't know.
Yeah. I know it's definitely coming out. I would stake my watch and warrant on it.
Yeah. Well, and I think they're still moving forward with a second season of Peacemaker. And then there's the Penguin series that they're, I think, still moving forward with based on the Batman's Penguin.
And they're doing Joker too. They're definitely doing that one. I'm kind of on the fence about the Penguin, only because that the Batman 2 hasn't actually been green lit yet. So because the Batman 2,
I thought I heard that it has officially, like, they're actually, it's hard to say because everything with DC and HBO and the whole WB thing, it's really hard to actually find confirmed shit because it's a lot of like rumored this or it's not like confirmed sources or anything. But one of the last things I had heard was that they have moved forward with production, but I haven't heard specifically the words Joker 2 greenlit. So this whole messy mess, I need words.
Well, they did the casting, right?
Yeah, so, they did,
Lady Gaga has officially been cast as, I guess, Harley Quinn. And they said it was going to be a musical. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be something. Well, I'm not that excited for it, but I'll probably still watch it because, podcast and all. But so we'll see. Who knows? Who knows what direction they end up going with it? And maybe it ends up working. I'm very, very apprehensive about it, though.
I'll be honest. Right.
Well, right on. I love your list. It's very similar to what I've got going on over here. So I've watched House of the Dragon. I watched the first episode when it aired, and then I rewatched the first episode last night with the husband because he hadn't seen it yet. So hopefully we'll get in the second episode like this weekend. The kids are staying with their grandpa. In the meantime, after watching the first episode of House of the Dragon, I was like, all right, fine. I'll rewatch Game of Thrones. So I've been rewatching Game of Thrones.
Oh my God, you're going back to the source.
I'm going back to the source. And you know what? And the thing I miss about Game of Thrones was for how it just like captured like the entire world. And I know not the entire world. Plenty of people didn't watch it or didn't like it, and that's fine. But it really felt like this giant collective kind of thing all for the fans, Monday morning, people standing around talking about what happened the night before, just and the hype that we'd all feel before a season would come out. And then those credits would roll and the intro would start. And how many houses across the world were like, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, you rest assured, you don't want to say everybody was watching it, but it's safe to say that. Right. It's safe to say everyone, because that was the most pirated television show in the world. Like, if you didn't have HBO, you want to steal it from somebody just so that you can watch that show. You want to download it somewhere so that you can watch that show. So yeah, it was pretty big deal. I remember I was watching that on my phone because I was away at work and that was the only way I could watch it. And I was like, well, I didn't want to be spoiled. One time something was spoiled for me, and I was so crushed that I went and rushed and I listened to the audiobooks of the entire series so that I would never be surprised again. So imagine having the Red Wedding spoiled for you. That's crushing.
Yeah.
you don't want that. You don't want that. You don't want the demise of Joffrey. And sometimes they didn't come out and say, okay, Joffrey got killed. But you could tell by what people wrote on Facebook. It's like, oh my God, they killed Joffrey. And now I'm spoiled. Now I got to go and watch it secondhand. It's like, I'm not going to get the impact that I would have gotten had I not been spoiled. So yeah. That was definitely something. Even the actors like, am I going to get killed this week?
Right. Am I going to make it? Kind of similar to like early seasons of like The Walking Dead and characters, actors wouldn't know if they're going to make it scene to scene, season to season. So I will be starting a rewatch of this season 3 of The Boys for some pod prep for a recording that I've got coming up here next weekend that I'm very, very excited for. And let's see, She-Hulk. I'm a little behind on She-Hulk, but I know why people are mad this week, and I just think it's fucking hilarious. Like, just die mad. Jesus Christ.
I haven't seen the third episode yet, but I know why they're mad, and I think it's dumb.
It's right? The dumbest shit. My God.
It's
like,
and if it's what I think it is, it's worse than dumb. It's because it's not, from what I heard, it's not even really part of the story. It's like worse than dumb. Right?
Exactly.
Yep. And then somebody wrote, it's okay for, okay. So did you see Hawkeye?
Yes.
And you remember Baron Zemo when he was in the club?
Yes.
And that people were okay with that.
Oh,
and
then,
and people, and they were so okay with it that they watched an hour version of it because they shot an hour's worth of footage and they put it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then there was somebody else's dancing and they were okay with that. They was okay with Thor's entire ass being shown. They was okay with that. But they watched She-Hulk and said suddenly they got problems.
Exactly. It's like, just fucking go find, like, if that is your biggest problem, the biggest thing you've got to be mad about, then your life is pretty fucking cush. And I wish I had your goddamn problems. Like, holy shit. Like, it's utterly ridiculous, the hate around it. And it's, what, just admit you're an asshole. That's why you
right.
But I have enjoyed I've got to get a little caught up on She-Hulk, but watched that first episode and I loved it, so I'm kind of waiting for a couple more to come out and then just sit down and do a few in a row. I did that with Harley Quinn, so I got caught up on that the other night, and I love that show. And that show has been renewed for a 4th season. Thank God we've got that at least.
Yeah, thank goodness, because that's a treasure right there.
Oh, I love that show so much. I've said it before, but that version of Jim Gordon is the only version of Jim Gordon I acknowledge from here on out.
Yeah, just a broken man, just leaning on Batman for support and emotional support.
Yes, it's I love it so much. So but yeah, so that's just kind of a handful of some of the things that's been streaming in my bubble.
So neither of has mentioned the Lord of the Rings show that's on. Is that on Apple?
I think, or is it's that on Amazon.
Oh good, I get to watch it because I don't have Apple. So yeah, are you planning on watching that one?
I'm sure I'll watch it with like my husband, because he's more of the Lord of the Rings fan than I am. He likes it a little bit more than I do. Like, I never went too crazy down that fandom rabbit hole. But I do enjoy it. They're entertaining and they're fun to watch. So, it's not as high on my list as maybe like House of the Dragon priority-wise.
Right, right. Absolutely.
But it does, like, I thought the trailer looked good, so I think we'll definitely be checking it out, but we just might not stay current on it. My husband is not a binge watcher. He has to go to bed pretty early at night, so sometimes we're not always able to watch like an hour-long episode, and we have to watch, the half-hour thing. So like only Murders in the Building was great for us because it's only half-hour episodes and it's entertaining as fuck. So, but I think we'll, like I said, I think we'll eventually check it out, but it's not high on the list. But oh, and The Sandman, and I watched The Sandman and I loved it so much. I love it so much.
Yeah, I'm behind on The Sandman. I need to get up on it.
Oh, I think you're gonna like it. I feel like okay. You're gonna love it. All right. I just want to thank you again, Zoe, for joining me today. And if you want to go ahead and self-promote one last time, if you'd like, give the listeners one last chance to know where they can find you.
All right. Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy sharing this space with you. I'm glad that you're able to tolerate me. Mm-hmm. Your listeners can once again find me at my website at www.backlickcinema.com. They can, if they want to email me, they can email me at fanmail@backlickcinema.com. On Twitter, I am Backlick Cinema. On Facebook, I am Backlick Cinema Podcast. On Instagram, I am Backlick Cinema Podcast. And on TikTok, I am Backlick Cinema. No real videos on TikTok. Maybe I got it. That's something else I got to get up on. Also, I've got links to my merch stores at the website. So that's pretty much everywhere you can find me. Maybe later on I'll add some more links. I got a, what do you call that thing? There's a drawing website where people post their 2D artwork. I can't remember the name of it right now, but maybe I'll post that later on. But those are the links that they can catch me on right now. And that podcast, Backlick Cinema Podcast, is available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you, Zoe, for joining me today. And I want to thank my listeners. Thank you, Bubblies, for listening today. And now go listen to Backlick Cinema Podcast. He just told you where he can be found. It's a great podcast. You'll love it. And keep streaming. Bye.
Bye. You can say,
there you go.
If you're enjoying the pod, be sure to let me know by rating and reviewing on a podcast player near you. And since sharing is caring, be sure to share your favorite episodes with your friends, family, mail carrier, everyone. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. And if you have any recommendations for what should be streaming in the bubble next, or you want to be tolerated, send an email to mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. If you want to show your love and support for this little old podcast in monetary form, search My Streaming Bubble over at buymeacoffee.com and buy me a cheese wedge, or two. And if you want to take that love and support to the next level, head over to Redbubble, where you can find and buy My Streaming Bubble merch, from the logo to quotes from episodes with funny little pictures to go with it. All monetary support goes right back into the podcast, from new recording equipment to night cheese. Thanks for all your support, and keep streaming.
Awesome.
We did it.
We did it.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yay! Air high five.